Steve Lindman. My guest today is Bruce Gagnon. Bruce is co-founder and coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. If you can imagine, well, I have a hard time imagining, Bruce, the notion of intelligent power. Intelligent power on Earth? We're talking about human intelligent power. How on Earth can there be intelligent power when the people who cause the most trouble, who most endanger us, are literally furthering policies that are systematically destroying life on Earth? And if they don't do it by nuclear power, they'll certainly do it by environmental destruction. And unless a way is found to stop what they're doing, and I'm talking about the lead belligerents, America and their co-NATO conspirators and a few others that I can mention and we discuss in this program, if we can't find a way to stop them, I have no doubt in the world it's going to happen. That literally human life on Earth will come to an end. I don't know that I'm young enough to see the day that it'll happen, thank heavens, but it literally seems like the direction we're going, Bruce. Welcome.
That's a great beginning there, Steve. It's a deep one to dig out it from. But what you say is basically true. And, you know, I'm reminded of our ancestors going back some thousands of years who survived incredible calamities here on the Earth, you know, the ice ages and droughts and famines and wars. And they had a singular focus in those times to survive, to take care of each other, to continue on. And today, sadly, many people are distracted by Dancing with the Stars and distracted by other such entertainment. And we don't have all hands on deck right now to deal with our real problems, which are growing corporate domination of our governments, not only in the U.S. but all over the world, climate change. And until we have all hands on deck, we're in big trouble. So thank God for shows like yours that give us a chance to sound the alarm.
There's no question about it, Bruce. Oh, there are a couple of quotes that strike me. The exact wording, I don't recall exactly. But Einstein saying many years ago, he had no idea what weapons would be used in World War III, but in World War IV, it would be sticks and stones. And there's a famous Bertrand Russell quote, to the extent that either we find a way to live with each other and end these wars, or it is an absolute certainty we'll end up destroying ourselves. And literally, I mean these things were said 50 years ago or so, and the kind of weapons we have today, and you talk about, and the work you do involves militarizing space, the idea that we find new ways to destroy things, Bruce, instead of finding new ways to enhance life on Earth, to improve the lives of people. I mean, it not only makes sense morally, it's economic sense. It's sense in every possible way other than the fact that some nations like America want, through the barrel of a gun, to enforce their dominance over the planet. But again, I repeat, these policies will lead to destruction.
Well, you know, the way I see it is the lunatics are running the asylum, and that unless the rest of us take charge and take control back, we're in big, big trouble. So for me, you know, I wanted to be a baseball coach. That was really what my ambition was. But I was just one of those people that couldn't look the other way. I couldn't turn away and ignore everything that was going on. All the more reason was because I have a son. And when he was 9 years old, one day I came home from a protest. Then I was living in Florida. I came home from a protest at the Space Center. We were protesting against a launch by NASA of plutonium that, if exploded, would have created a 60-mile radioactive radius where the people would have to be evacuated, where the animals would have to be rounded up, the vegetation would have to be destroyed, the buildings would have to be removed and the top half inch of soil would have to be removed for 60 mile radius. All this was in the environmental impact statement for NASA for the plutonium launch. And I came home and my son met me at the door. He was 9 at the time and he had on a gas mask. And he said to me, "Don't worry, Dad, I could just wear this for the rest of my life if there's an accident." And he was trying to make me feel better. And in that moment, my heart melted. Anyone who is a parent understands the feeling when you see your 9-year-old child facing this very stark, you know, reality. And so it was in that moment that I said to myself that this is what I have to spend the rest of my life doing, is working to make sure that my son has a future on this planet, and all other children and all other species have a future too. Nothing could be more important. No amount of money, no amount of, you know, great job, fancy business card, all that kind of stuff was not important. What was important was I had to do my job as a human being.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree, Bruce. At this stage in my life, I'm retired, so I literally can spend all my time on these issues, hosting this program, getting a lot of interviews, doing a lot of writing, and I simply can't imagine doing any other thing. I look forward every day to getting up and jumping into more issues and hoping that maybe enough people will read what I write and spread the word to other people. I mean, we really have a clear and present danger, and you're right, and I repeat it all the time, that most people are distracted, they think about other things, and while on the one hand I understand that people have they're working people, they have family issues, and they need to spend time on these. I mean, I went through this. Most people go through this. I understand that. But nothing rises to the level of survival. And literally, we're in a fight for survival. And as you say, if we don't take it upon ourselves to do it, it's not going to get done. I mean, we're heading in the wrong direction. And every month, every year that passes, things just seem to get worse. People thought it couldn't get any worse than George Bush. Well, guess what? It did get worse. And I guarantee whoever replaces Obama will be worse than him. This is the downward path that America has been on for heaven knows how many years. It's a terribly destructive downward path. And there's got to be a way to figure out to stop this. Mass activism is the only way I know. And it takes people putting their bodies on the line to do it.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, it's a corporate oligarchy, and the corporations have determined. Well, let me preface this by saying that some years ago, I watched on C-SPAN a Pentagon presentation, and so this all was in this presentation. The speaker, speaking to a huge auditorium of high-level military brass, said that under corporate globalization of the world economy, we in the United States aren't going to have jobs anymore, conventional production jobs. You know, we're not going to make shoes or cars or clothes or refrigerators or cell phones or TVs. It's cheaper to go overseas, cheaper labor over there. Our role, the speaker said, in this new world order is security export. And so it's no coincidence today that the number one industrial export product of America is weapons. And when weapons are your number one industrial export product, what is your global marketing strategy for that product line?
Pretty easy to answer that question, Bruce. There's no question about it. And that really is a highlight issue of what America stands for in my mind. The notion that the real manufacturing jobs that used to exist. I worked for J&L Steel in the early days after I finished school. I was a marketing analyst. Well, all of that is gone. Steel City no longer exists. Motown no longer exists in Detroit. Detroit is an absolute disaster case. Pittsburgh reinvented itself. Detroit has to figure out a way to do it. But these manufacturing jobs, as you said, have been exported, have been offshored to low-wage countries, and the only thing America excels in, manufacturing-wise, is weapons of destruction, the worst kinds of weapons. weapons of destruction, true weapons of mass destruction. And when you make these things, you got to figure out a way to use them to keep the war machine going. So you wage wars, and that's what America does constantly.
Yeah, we're like a drunk sitting at the bar stool because our local economies are addicted to military spending. It's the only game in town. It's the only money. That's why we see all over the country now 36 or 37 states drooling on their knees, hands outstretched, begging to the Pentagon to become a one of six drone test host sites around the country for the drone program. So 37 states on their knees begging, offering all kinds of, you know, tax incentives and everything else for a few little jobs that they're going to get in this drone program that is going to essentially be used to spy on us as they crack down on us, because we have superfluous populations in America anymore. We're not needed anymore in the larger corporate domination scheme. And so they're essentially thinning out the population. You know, years ago when I was in college, I was looking for a part-time job, and I answered an ad in a local paper in Gainesville, Florida. I was going to the University of Florida. And I went to work for a woman who was disabled, but who was writing a book about the various forms of genocide. And so I would go and do the research at the library for her and then bring it back to her. And one day, she had me getting copies of a particular page of a book that had a graphic that she wanted, and it was called the Caloric Reduction Intake Schedule at the Warsaw Poland Ghetto at the time of the Nazi occupation of Poland and Hitler's genocide of the Jewish people. And what they did was they had a plan, a schedule, that over a period of years, if they reduce the caloric intake of these people inside the Jewish ghetto there in Warsaw, Poland, that people would die. They knew that. They had a whole schedule. And so her thesis in her book was that there were many different ways of committing genocide, not just the gas ovens. And so as we look at America today and we see the cutbacks in food stamps, we see the cutbacks in the attacks on Social Security, the cutbacks in mental health programs, the cutbacks in various other kinds of programs of social uplift, do we not understand that the oligarchy, the corporate-dominated government, clearly knows that if you reduce people's ability to eat and to live, to have medical care and everything else, if you reduce those programs over a period of years, you cause people to die earlier than they would otherwise, and you begin to thin out the population. And so isn't what we see today by both Republicans and Democrats in our Congress, even Obama calling, essentially willing to trade cuts in Social Security with the Republicans. Do we not see this as a form of genocide upon the people of our own country?
Well, there's no question about it, Bruce. And I'll mention Henry Kissinger. I have an article written about him. I'll get it out probably early next week. Next week, he'll be awarded the Intrepid Freedom Award, if you can imagine that. He also won a Nobel Peace Prize. This is a man responsible, literally. The blood on his hands could never wash out. In multiple lifetimes, millions of deaths on his hands. And one of his schemes back in the early 1970s was something that was called a National Security Study Memorandum 200, NSSM 200. It called for drastic global depopulation, and he called it, he said, it should be the highest priority of U.S. foreign policy toward third world countries. In other words, I think he used the phrase, useless eaters. Get rid of these people. He had all kinds of schemes to do it. You can wage wars. You can sterilize them. You can starve them. You can get them diseased. You could do all kinds of things. But get rid of these people. And he had a modest proposal. Initially, I think it was something like 500 million people. But I think today the notion is to literally cut the world population in half or even more than half. And here's a guy that will be honored again next week, the 23rd of May, an Intrepid Freedom Award. He should have been in prison long ago. These are the kind of people that rule America, Bruce.
Yeah, it's tragic. It's absolutely tragic. But we have to take some responsibility as citizens, because in the end, our subservience, our fear, our acquiescence to this corporate machine allows it to churn on. And I understand that people feel disempowered. I understand that people are depressed and they care. They generally know what's going on. They just don't think you can beat City Hall in this case. And a lot of people have given up. But I come back to this point of responsibility, you know, talking about Hitler and Hitler Germany again. You know, the Nuremberg trials really spoke to this reality that the people of Germany, the German military, they all had a moral and ethical responsibility to stand up to their fascist dictatorship and to stop its tragic impact on not only the Jews, but the people throughout Europe as Hitler was invading country after country after country. So similarly today, the United States invading country after country after country, in the case of Iraq, killing I don't know how many million, but more than a million people, I'm sure, and today in Afghanistan and Pakistan and on the African continent, killing legions of innocent civilians with our drones and other weapon systems. And so we, the people, have a responsibility to deal with this, because it's done in our name with our tax dollars, and we can't just turn away and walk away from this responsibility. And so I think that as difficult as this struggle is for us, and it is indeed difficult, I'm not, you know, one to sugarcoat this situation, but I think that we're not all doing enough to stand up. And the people around the world are just aghast and upset and angry and furious and with us because of the fact that we're not doing our job in this country to stop this insanity.
We're not, Bruce, and people who think that we can't fight City Hall are dead wrong, because in the past, people in America did fight City Hall and they won. It never was an easy struggle. It took years. But the number one example I like to use is the fight to end slavery in the 19th century. It was thought to be impossible. There was a civil war that certainly played a role, but literally a small group of people were committed to end slavery in America, and slavery ended. It didn't end all that well, because we got Jim Crow, we have wage slavery today. It's because energy wanes and the victories are lost. So we won civil rights, but they're all gone. We won labor rights, but they're all gone. But it shows that these things can be won. And if the energy stays focused on what you've won and understands that unless you keep on this stuff, they're going to pull it away from you. These battles can be fought again and they can be won. But it takes commitment. It doesn't take a majority. It just takes enough committed people to decide they're not going to take it anymore. And the powers that run the country, or any other country, Bruce, know well that the ordinary people of these countries are the real superpower. And if they decide that they literally won't take it anymore, they don't have enough guns, they don't have enough Marines to put these people down, because they'll get what they want. And this is what revolutions are made of. I hope we don't get a violent one. There's certainly been enough of those in the world, but there have been violent revolutions and nonviolent ones that have really changed things. It happened in America. It can happen again in America. I can only dream, Bruce, that I would live long enough to see even the beginnings of something like that. I had hopes for Occupy Wall Street, and I haven't given up on them, but it seems like that really, to a great extent, has faded.
Well, but lately I've been feeling kind of excited because I'm seeing a huge movement developing across the country, multi-issue movement that is all, in the end, pointing to this corporate domination. Whether it's people in, for example, North Carolina who were organizing and getting arrested in their state capital daily now, blacks and whites together opposing the draconian legislative efforts by the Republicans in that state, who are basically trying to destroy the voting rights of blacks and elderly and students in that state, as the white southern elements feel increasingly out of, you know, that they're losing control. Indian people, through the whole movement that started up in Canada and has now spread across our country as well, they're moving into action. There's a lot of protest around the Guantanamo issue now, and the hunger strike that the prisoners on Guantanamo are having. So there's a lot of activity. Students increasingly protesting against they're being turned into indentured servants because of student debt. And so there is a lot of opposition brewing across the country. It's a big country. It's hard to pull us all together at times. But I think I'm beginning to see some signs that people are starting to move. And one thing, though, I think we all have to do a much better job of is to make sure that we connect the dots to our endless war program, because many of these various issues tie back, I think, to military spending and endless war. Climate change. The Pentagon is the biggest polluter, has the biggest carbon footprint on the planet Earth today. When you talk about student debt or you talk about cuts in social programs, well, when you spend 57 cents out of every discretionary tax dollar on the Pentagon, you're going to have to cut all these other programs in order to give that money to the military. And the issue I work on, space technology, one of the reasons why the military budget is getting so large is because space program, military space program, the military satellites, all the launches, missile defense, drone programs, all these different space programs are so expensive that they're draining the budget. The Pentagon has long said that the Star Wars program, moving the arms race into space, will be the largest industrial project in the history of the planet Earth, necessitating a dedicated funding source. In fact, in Space News, one of the industry publications some years ago, they did an editorial that said, look, we've got to come up with a dedicated funding source to pay for all of our space operations. And they said, we have. We're now sending our lobbyists to Washington to secure that funding source. And they said it's the entitlement programs that officially in America are Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and what's left of the welfare program after a succession of Republican and Democrats have torn it apart. So these are the programs that the military-industrial complex has identified for defunding in order to pay for this militarization and weaponization of space. So as movements build, I think it's really important to connect that final dot back to the Pentagon and its voracious budget.
Bruce, you're exactly right. I've mentioned that in my writing. Literally, I mean, the battle to destroy Medicare and Social Security, especially doing it incrementally so people don't even realize what's going on. I mean, they're doing it to me on Medicare and Social Security. Instead of getting an inflation-adjusted increase in my Social Security benefits, the inflation numbers are literally manipulated to be at most about a third of what inflation really is in the country, literally that low. They've corrupted the model to calculate inflation, and they hit me on Medicare by upping the amount that I have to pay on what's called Part B. You get Part A for nothing, but you have to have Part B, and the only way that I and other Medicare recipients can get the kind of coverage we need if we have an illness and need to pay for it is to buy supplemental insurance. So the contractual guarantee my government gave me when I was there at the very beginning of Medicare, having payroll taxes extracted from me, and the deal was a contractual obligation. I pay my premiums every month, and I get free medical care when I retired. Well, it never happened, Bruce, and now they want to take that away as well. And you're right, they need a funding source to militarize space, to do all of the other militarized things that they have in mind, including locking down the USA with Homeland Security, with a mass spying on people, black budgets for CIA, NSA, CIA, FBI, the whole works. It's really a despicable attack on human beings abroad and at home, and they need to get their grubby hands on more money. So there's a honeypot from Medicare and Social Security especially, and this is the dirty game. Get rid of these things incrementally, hand it over for military purposes at home and abroad. If people don't understand this, Bruce, I mean, these are the kind of things that people need to understand, because they're literally having their futures ripped away from them.
Well, you know, it's the new slavery. You were talking about slavery a moment ago, and we have a new institution of slavery today. And the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about is so vast that it's become an economic system in and of itself, and it's one that literally controls our nation. And just as slavery was, another dark economic system. And as you well pointed out, we have beat slavery at one time, that institution of slavery. We did beat it. And one of the great activists in that abolition movement was none other than Frederick Douglass, a former slave himself. And he had a phrase that still lingers today that goes something like this: power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. So in this time of slavery by the military-industrial complex that has its tight control of our national budget, what is our demand? Well, our demand should be that we convert the military-industrial complex, that we stop this endless war system, and that we deal with our existing problems, again, like climate change and growing poverty and everything else. And by converting the military-industrial complex to building rail systems, to building a solar society, wind turbines, a whole lot more, home weatherization, hiring the unemployed to turns fallen cities like Detroit into public gardens to feed people. Imagine how many people could be employed in a place like Detroit, tearing down dilapidated buildings, planting gardens in their place. It could be done if we took our tax dollars that are now being wasted on endless war. The University of Massachusetts at Amherst Economics Department did the definitive study on this, and they said that if you spend $1 billion on military production, you create 8,500 jobs per $1 billion. But if you take that same $1 billion and you put it into building rail systems, you double the number of jobs. So everybody's talking about jobs these days. The public's worried about them. The politicians promise jobs. But the truth is, we're not going to get jobs from the corporations because they're moving overseas. The only jobs we're going to get is using our own tax dollars to invest in this country, doing things we need and that do good work and that help us solve our problems. Again, climate change. You build a national rail system, you help solve for climate change.
Absolutely. Oh, Bruce, the music means we are out of time. I wish I could add more, and I wish we could go on, and I hope to have you back to continue this discussion. But absolutely, the future is in our hands, Bruce, as you point out so well, and I do all the time. we got to get in the fight. Otherwise, we're going down. Bruce, again, my great thanks for coming on. This is important stuff. You'll never get it on U.S. television. I've got to sign off. Just remind listeners, join us over the weekend, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturdays and Sundays. Make it a regular habit. Again, Bruce, many thanks.